So this is part two of my interview with my dad, Poppy Pete. If you haven't listened to episode one, it's on iTunes. You can find it there, or on the website. And before we start here, he was talking about life growing up, working far away from home when he was 15, 16, or 17, and the changes that happened very quickly in his life. So as a fool, you had a full life, but not much going on really, was it? Work.
Yeah, and so it was pretty hard. And then Dad died in 68.
Yeah.
And then, though I got moved to the entrance then, so that made
Did
it a
you
little bit
get
easier then.
moved? Did you ask to get transferred because of
I did
that?
ask them if I could get transferred, yeah.
Yeah. So your dad, you said, died in 68. So you were
68.
18, but you had a younger brothers and sisters, and then you moved back to the
Yeah,
entrance.
18, then they were, 14, 12, 8 and 10 or something like that.
Yeah. So,
Moved back to the
he was
entrance, yeah.
sick for a while though.
Yes, he had motor neuron disease.
So how long before he passed did that like present itself, I guess?
It was probably only about 18 months or so. He's
Okay.
went down sort of thing pretty quickly. As I know now, there's 15 different types of the disease, but they really couldn't identify it
Yeah.
back then. So it was a long time. But his arm and voice and everything went first,
Okay.
whereas a lot of people, can be legal or whatever. So Mum cared for him, sort of thing, and then the RSL were very helpful.
Yeah.
Welfare officers and things are always there, and so it was an impact to a degree, but probably not as much as it should be. Like those kids, you always have distractions.
Yeah, it just passes over you, I guess, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you missed him. Mum would be getting him up, wheeling him around, and getting him
Yeah.
set up at the table, and in the end, you couldn't really understand, but he used to have the board with all the letters on it, sort of thing, and it'd spell out the words.
Okay.
He used to call it the idiot board.
It's in the past. I've never really heard you speak much about your dad, and I was talking to some of my cousins, to Luke, and they were saying the same thing, that Ross never really talked about him much. Max never really talks about him all that much. Is there a reason for that?
No, probably just that with him going so young, like he was 48 or something like that.
Yeah.
He was a hard worker. He was he wouldn't survive now. He was a good child beater. He got hit for virtually every reason, sort of thing. But
Yeah.
it's just what it was just what was
What
done.
was done?
That's just what was
And do you think that
done.
was all of the kids?
But he was, oh,
Or do
well,
you reckon
it gets easier as you go down the line, sort of
Yeah.
thing for him. But see, Julie and Narelle were young, so they might not even
Have much.
remember, sort of thing,
Yeah.
that much. There's a picture of him over there that's been doctored to a degree.
Yeah, he's almost got blush on him at
Yeah,
that
and that's what I said to you. There's never been a barrier teeth like that. So they've painted his teeth or something now.
No, that's true.
And anyway, so I still remember. I used to be very hard for me for a number of years on the anniversary of his death,
Yeah.
because there was so much he'd missed out on
Yeah.
apart from myself. So it was always very emotional. Drinky,
Yeah.
the rose, all that sort of stuff. So,
The rose is that's your.
oh well, just an example. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's just an example. So To do, for what we did, we sort of was never a great deal of money. He worked on the farm, and he had these ideas that, well, we're going to grow beans, I'm going to grow tomatoes. The farm ground,
Yeah.
one side of the hill was very fertile and good, but the rest of it was stony ground that wouldn't grow bloody nothing. So
Yeah.
So that's why he moved, right? They got dudded. He wanted to live on a farm.
They got dudded with the purchase of it, yeah, because the and it was probably down to ignorance to a degree, because the real estate agent said, "Yes, look, it's wonderful ground. Look at all these beautiful trees. Imagine how rich the ground is that's growing these beautiful trees."
Yeah,
good one. So anyway, yeah. So then we had the tomatoes were just nearing ripe, and then we had the heat wave for a week, like it's been this week for a week, and they got burnt.
Yeah,
the tomatoes got burnt, so you couldn't sort of sell them, and. I think one of the other things we had were beans, and a late frost sort of put pay to half the beans and whatnot. So he went to, I think it was painting, back to house painting.
Yeah.
Because he'd done that before and had numerous jobs when we were in Sydney. I can remember a bit more probably about Sydney, you know, when we were growing up there. He had an office type thing that I used to do. Some sort of magazine that they produced, and you know, used to play useless stuff. It's probably the young equivalency then of Murder in the Dark. And,
okay, yeah.
You know, you'd have to go and find him, and you never could, and you're always scared because he wasn't past bloody jumping out of and frightening the life out of you.
And that seems to carry on through the family, that tradition of frightening the children.
Frightening the children. But then, in the later. Later times, he used to work 6 days a week.
Yeah.
That's the time. And then he used to do septic tanks. I think
that's right.
Well, they used to be what the old round septic tanks used to look like. He had the idea of doing septic closets, and which were square. And then you'd make them, put them together with these concrete slabs, which he always had on the pathways we had around. He'd always have all these slabs on there, and then he'd have to load them up and take them and dig a hole by hand. He used to dig the hole by hand and do these slabs. So he was sort of working all the time.
So I guess when he passed away, it was kind of, everyone was busy, I guess. You're working a bank and there's all these children, so you sort of had to get on with it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Was it different for you when your mum passed, when you were... Well, was 96?
With Dad, you were sort of expecting at some stage. So, still came as a shock, but...
Yeah.
You were sort of expecting it, but Mum was completely out of the blue. So that was probably much more difficult.
She was
72nd birthday, so which was very young. So that was really out of the blue. And, more so for the rest of the family, I think. Because the girls were very close to Mum.
Well, she was, I mean, obviously for me and my cousin, she was the head of the family, because obviously your dad had already passed on. So just having her, that's all I remember growing up, was everyone went to her for advice or judgment. Relationship advice from her was always welcome.
Yeah, and we used to get the nitty gritty usually as to what she'd thought of what was not. She discussing the daughters-in-law and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, I have written here any what she thought of Mum when you first started going out, or
no, I don't think. Some funny situations we had. We used to go over there Friday nights, I think, when we started going out.
Yeah.
So that was, Dad died in 68, so we started going out in 69. But anyway, so we used to go over there Friday nights, and Anne used to stay the night.
Yeah.
And so...
Separate beds?
Yeah, a few separate beds. And my Mum used to sleep in one bed, I think. Anne had the double bed.
Yeah.
And Laurel, I think, used to sleep in there. Anyway, that's, and then I'd be sleeping there with the normal spot. Anyway, one night Narelle had to go to the toilet. And she found it quite difficult climbing over the top of me. And anyway, I didn't know whether she said anything or not, but Mum said, kindly get your canoodling out of the way before you come here. I said, but it's no canoodling, we're just... Just being
Just being friendly.
Yeah, yeah, so, but anyway, so the girls, yeah, would have only been young, so they would have been, well, Merle would have been, so they were younger than I thought.
Yeah.
The thing was, Julie's 10 years younger than me, so if I was 18, she was 8 and Merle was 9, probably, yeah. Because there wasn't very much between them. But, yeah, so that was this funny episode thing. But, yeah, that was a big shock sort of thing, and then, yeah, well, I don't know, they're not great emotional carriers. They tend to be more emotional, whereas I tend to see what's got to be done and organise to do it. And so that's, Max and I were the executive sort of thing, so I had to sort of go through and
do all that stuff.
Did all the paperwork, do all the legwork, because I'd finished work sort of thing.
Did it hit you later then? Is that what tends to happen if you bother, like, push it all down?
It took a week probably. Yeah. It took a week because...
There's stuff to do.
There was stuff to do. And I, you know, the first thing was someone had to tell Julie you can't bring her up, so we and I drove down there.
Yeah.
Drove down to tell Julie. She refused to believe it sort of thing, blah, blah, blah. So then Anne came up with her in the car and I followed.
Yeah.
So I had to sort of the strong man there, and I remember when we got up there, she was still laying on the bed where she'd fallen in the morning, sort of thing. You know? Yeah. So I said to my brother, "God, I'm full of story. I haven't done anything yet." See, that was the other thing too. With Max was on, I had to ring Max. Because I just put, was in a new, you know, the mobile number sort of thing for it. Oh, where are you? I'm on the train. I was hoping you were driving because I was going to divert him across the room. You're on the train, all right. And I said, oh, can you call in a mum's on your way home? What for? I said, oh, they'll fatigue when you get there. So he thought it was probably Uncle Barry had died.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So that was sort of, you know, got that out of the road and such. So then... The next morning, I had to call in and see Auntie Jenny and Uncle Barry, and then Auntie Jenny's in tears, and you know, because Mum was going to be her shoulder to cry on.
We and Barry
Uncle
went,
Barry yeah. went, yeah. So there's nothing sort of thing I can do there. So then we had to go and meet with the funeral people, and all the people are sitting around crying with the funeral people. So I'm mentioning, you know, the
keeping it together
and organising all that. So I just really didn't have the time to do that. So it was at the end of the week, I think, probably the Saturday or something like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it was a shock. But anyway, we got brought up. I still keep the paperwork there. If you want to know anything about what happened in 1996, it's all down
the way. It's still there? Okay, I'll look at that later. All right, well, should we have a look at some of the songs? We've been here a while. We haven't really looked at your list.
There's the...
Now, you mentioned the Rose before.
Oh, well.
There's a couple of favourites to... We could release a CD, Songs to Cry To.
Well, that sort of goes back... When I had my first real girlfriend and she broke up with me, that was going home on the train. Oh, heartbreaking. And I think it was a Dusty Springfield and Cilla Black. And,
yeah.
Percy Sledge is When a Man Loves a Woman. See, so I used to call them my Monday morning crying songs. They were sort of things. So.
That's where I get it from.
So.
She can do no wrong.
So yeah, it's just part of my long slide into insanity, I think. It just went from there. But but just when you were talking about politics earlier on, a lot of the books I read too were politically based, and Power Without Glory by Frank Hardy was a classic book written about the Wren family, and he disguised it all by keeping the initials and giving them different names, and that went right through the thing. So, but it was really based on the corruption, you know, that used to exist in the Labor Party in Australia and whatnot. It was a book he had to publish himself. So, but anyway, since then I've bought a copy of that.
So, like, why? You hinted before, you said, and you mentioned it the other day too, that you feel in your family that you and Julie are the Philistines, so to speak, of the family. Everyone else went to uni?
Yes.
Got degrees, masters, some of them, whatever they're up to now. But you are very well read in the field of politics. Do you feel like when you meet up with them, I remember a couple of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, where you were saying that you were going to read some classic books because you were sick of missing out on when they start discussing things like that. Has that always been an issue for you?
I taught myself out of that.
When you start reading them, you know, it's terrible.
But not really. I should point out that you know, we've all had the same opportunities. And my advanced lethargy always prevented me from... and the fact I didn't like school. Yeah, I didn't like school. So the thought of going to university didn't really appeal to me to any great degree. But Max, him and Ross were doing shift work, which probably aided them with their study and their advancement. But Max, both were fitters, I think. Then they both did engineering.
Yeah.
Mechanical engineering, and then degrees. And Max has got a science degree and several other degrees that he's got.
Yeah.
From Macquarie Uni. But, yeah, they were all, yes, thinkers. Ross in particular. I think Max, he's whatever topic you wanted to sort of do. When he turned 60, I remember, which of course was 10 years ago, Narelle made a speech and talked about how he'd helped her to go back to university and gave her the encouragement and all that sort of stuff, and what an inspiration he was and all that sort of stuff. So I'm getting lower and lower in the seat the more she's going on. So that'll be certainly be brought up when he's 70.
Yeah.
Narelle, are you going to do the speech? Come on.
For your hero?
Yes. Get up and, you know, we can all sing. Hail, hail.
So, but do you find you lock into things? So your politics is you really enjoy.
Yeah, well, I try, because of stress levels these days, I try not to get too involved in it, because it's just so easy to swear at the television or curse or...
Yeah, but I mean even historical politics.
Oh, yeah, well, I always took an interest virtually in Australian politics and, when looking at the royal families in England, you know, back to Henry VIII and sort of those people and who they, what the Parliament was doing then, things like that. And, even you can always learn something. When Barney Gumble had the big fight about who was the best Prime Minister, Pitt the Younger or Lord Palmerston, I had to go and look up Lord Palmerston to see what he was famous for.
Yes, no, I went through a lot of uni, putting my hand up and answering questions that were based from The Simpsons and Seinfeld. Oh, yes, very well done.
Yes, that's how I can sort of remember all of them.
Yeah.
And, yes. Yeah, so, of course, the end of that's when he gets up, he ended in the bean and goes, oh, peanut.
That's right. One of the things I remember very clearly was the Monty Python song about Oliver Cromwell and doing a lesson of that at uni, must have been related to Shakespeare or something, we were doing it. Oh, I knew so much about Oliver Cromwell and they were amazed. I don't know, it's just a song. just a weird song. But I wanted to go over, so your education, so like I said, you're big on your political books, but the education that we got, me and Michael and Jason, so the three boys, was really based on, I guess, pop culture. Was what we were born up on was Monty Python and the Marx Brothers and Looney Tunes and that kind of, I guess, silliness.
Blackadder.
Blackadder, yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was comedy based, and me being the youngest, I found that I got exposure to a lot of these things before my friends, because, well, you're in the room while this is being shown. Was that a conscious thing for you, or was that just nice to share?
Mm.
These are the Marx Brothers. Yeah, these are the Stooges.
These are funny. The Stooges, and yeah, that's just, it was just, I think it was what I was watching, and
yeah.
Yes, have a look at this. This is really funny.
Well, I remember Michael saying that he got taken to see, was it A Night at the Opera?
Night at the Opera, Day at the Races, a big store, I think.
All back to back.
Yeah, I think, there might have only been two.
Yeah.
I think we didn't stay for the third one, so it might have been Day at the Races and Night at the Opera.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure there, but certainly, yeah, Night at the Opera. He was there, and it was quite a decent crowd there, and it was quite funny, because, you know, laughter's infectious sort of thing, so people were thinking it was, you know, they were laughing genuinely sort of thing. And when the Marx Brothers did the routine, the room where the policeman's looking for me, they're switching the rooms around and all that. When they got to the last scene sort of thing, and he comes in and he's sitting in his arms, you know, under the
tennis rocking chair and knitting
sort of thing, you know. Oh, sorry, I'm in the wrong room sort of thing. You know, they get a round of applause.
Yeah.
So you can imagine it really gave you a feel for the stage play where they'd sort of done it first of all.
That's a big regret of last year. Now it's last year. I was all set to take Violet to see it. They were showing Night of the Opera for one day in a cinema in Canberra. I invited you and Michael to come down and watch it with Violet. And then, yes, things happened and Justine was away and there was another party on and that couldn't happen. So that's my concern, is I'm going to show Violet a Night of the Opera fairly soon. In a room with just, you know, two people, is it going to be... Is she going to get as much out of it? Probably not, obviously, but...
And so, my friends, as mayor of this great city, I take pleasure in inviting our distinguished visitors to tell us something about their achievement. What'll I say?
Tell them you're not here.
Suppose they don't believe me.
They'll believe you when you start talking.
Friends!
Talk fast. I see a man in the crowd with a rope.
How we happened to come to America is a great story, but I don't tell that. When we first started out and we got no idea you give us this grand reception, we don't deserve it. And when I say we don't deserve it, believe me, I know what I'm talking about. Huh?
That's a novelty.
So now I tell you how we fly to America. The first time we started, we get a halfway across when we run out of gasoline and we got to go back. Then I take twice as much gasoline. This time we were just about to land, maybe 3 feet. Well, what do you think? We run out of gasoline again. And the back we go again and get the more gas. This time I take plenty gas. Well, we get halfway over. When what do you think happened? We forgot the airplane. So we got to sit down and we talk it over. Then I get the great idea. We not take a gasoline. We not take the airplane. We take a steamship. And that, friends, is how we fly across the ocean.
I'm going out and arrange your bail.
Yeah, so that was, I remember that's what we grew up on. There's a lot of silliness in this house. The family as well, extended family, Uncle David as well. Appreciate the Goon Show, that kind of thing.
Well, when we first were going out, I had a Goon record I used to play for him.
Yeah.
You know, when I was over at their place sort of thing. Yeah, so, yeah, it was just a sharing thing, yeah, if you can watch something. Even you know, if I saw any good movie or that was funny,
yeah,
or scary when they remade The Thing,
yes,
which was the greatest scary movie ever, sort of thing.
Yeah,
I ummed and ahed. Are these kids old enough to see this? And I thought, well, yes, I think they are. Jason tells me he had nightmares for months.
Yeah, I'm still getting over a few of those scenes. But yeah, that tended to be the case.
But it was just such a great thing. And so you say, look, man, remember, it's a movie. It's not real. Yeah. But it was just so so good.
I think you should rewatch that too. It gets better, I think, that movie.
Yeah, because I was sort of fascinated by the special effects. And when we went to see Star Wars and whatnot sort of thing, the first time I saw that. Yeah, that's pretty corny now. And Superman.
Yeah.
You know, Superman, I could just sit there watching the credits, listening to the music.
I remember that's one of both sayings that your parents say that you pass on to your kids was, hey, I paid money to hear this theme music. Be quiet.
Yeah.
But yeah, those movies, yeah. And I remember we went and saw Spaceballs. We went and saw The Three Amigos. So that was always important to see. Those types of very silly movies. But I wanted to get back to music. You mentioned a lot of Beatles. You said there were a lot of Beatles songs. Because we grew up with your album collection.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the Beatles are in that, obviously. It's got rock and roll music in there, which is a rarity. Hold on to that.
Rarity. And the Essential Beatles, is it Australia only?
Yeah.
God only knows what the condition's like.
No.
Anyway.
Didn't my brother pull them all out and swim across them?
He did, but whether I had the Beatles ones at that stage, rock and roll music, it would have been before that, so he would have done that, I think. But Friday night music playing on the old bloody record player.
Yeah.
Screech!
So did you follow when at the time were you into the Beatles at the time?
Well, we when they first came out, we were all sort of keen on them and watch them on the television. And if the Beatles, they had a half hour thing on at 7 o'clock, well, that meant no one was down the street till 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
when I was in my teens, so I'd sort of had an interest in them all the time. To the detriment of everything else, probably, because there was a lot of songs in the old artists in the 60s and 70s that I know the name but couldn't relate to what songs they might sing.
Huh.
And, of course, being married young and all that sort of stuff, so, mum's not going out to shows type of person, so I'd seen... tribute band sort of thing to a lot of these people, and pardon me, don't meet the songs until later on, where they finish up on. I think when Spotify released or got access to the Beatles movies, pardon me, I didn't have much idea on how to work Spotify, so I finished up downloading 5 albums or something.
Yeah.
Where a lot of the records are repeated and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember, because I obviously got into the Beatles and I got the CD or every CD in the red box, and then you take the CDs to play it as well. But what were some of your other songs that you had?
Well, just on the... it was a couple of things that I just wanted to mention.
Okay.
Cabaret was one that the movie / the soundtrack from Cabaret. I was very keen on some of the songs in that. And it was something that I always remember. The Bolero by Ravel, I think it is.
Yeah, Ravel, yeah.
Ravel's Bolero, I think called 10 or something it was.
Dudley Moore
and...
Bo Derek,
and she, so that what sort of gave it its reputation, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I was at a training school in probably the 70s at some stage, and they used Bolero as an example for building a project.
Okay.
So, you know, that you start off, we'll give them an idea or something, and then, you know, you do this, and then you add this, and then you go and get that. And then at the end of it...
It collapses.
You've got your project, sort of thing, you know, which I just... That was interesting that someone had come up with a concept of using, you know, this song to sort of build your project, you know, which was quite amusing.
You can put your hand up and say, isn't this a sex song?
Oh, well, everybody knew
where
it was from and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yes.
But there's a couple of Johnny Cash that I've got there.
Sunday morning coming down. The rose.
When I was growing up, when we were in Sydney, we were, you had the radio, no one had television, you used to have some of your favourite songs. Now, my mother come from the country and western aspects.
That's true, yes, I remember Percy Faith.
Country and western, Even my poor old cousin who passed away.
Yeah.
You know, they had Slim Dusty playing in the background as he was going. So, but anyway, so the first song that sort of sticks in my mind, apart from Lonnie Donegan's Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavour, was we used to listen to Johnny Cash singing the Rock Island Line, which used to be on the radio. So this was in the 50s.
On the Rock Island Line, she runs down into New Orleans. There's a big toll gate down there, and you know if you got certain things on board when you go through the toll gate, well, you don't have to pay the man no toll. Well, a train driver, he pulled up to the toll gate, and the man hollered and asked him what all he had on board, and he said, I got livestock, I got livestock, I got cows, I got pigs, I got sheep, I got mules, I got all livestock. Well, they said, you all right, boy. You don't have to pay no toll. You can just go right on through. So he went on through the toll gate. And as he went through, he started picking up a little bit of speed. Picking up a little bit of steam. He got on through. He turned, looked back to man. He said, well, I fooled you. I fooled you. I got pig iron. I got pig iron. I got all pig iron. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Well, if you ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station for the Rock Island Line. Oh, cloudy in the west, and it looked like rain. Round the curve, come a passenger train. Northbound train on the southbound track. It's all right, I'll even, buddy.
Don't Take Your Guns to Town was another one. And Ring of Fire, Ghost Riders in the Sky. You know, and Tom Dooley was another one that was sort of used to listen to on the radio there. Head, Tom Dooley. So that was probably the first lot of stuff that I sort of took an interest in. See, Neil Diamond, I had a Neil Diamond record in the 70s.
Yeah.
So Sonny and Cher's I Got You, Babe, we were... in the pub at Bungendore, when we went to get his stupid cousin's car with his mate, and we played I Got You by 10 times or something. And in the end, the owners complained. I reckon no one was coming in if that song goes up again.
I can get that.
Yeah, Bette Midler with the Rose, you know, that was... always a...
Still works for you?
An emotional... Maybe. Yeah, they probably would, yeah.
Yeah.
Some say love, it is a river that drowns the tender reed. Some say love, some say love, it is a hunger, and
The loved ones that was talking about them before. That was they were the first non, I suppose, non aesthetic. Would that be the word? Band, in that they look rough and tumble. The lead singer looked like a rat, and you know, so they weren't one of the clean.
You're not the pretty things. Pretty groups.
Yes. No, and then, you know, and even the Beatles. My old man used to complain about the Beatles constantly and how long their hair was and all that sort of stuff. They weren't, of course, as bad as the Rolling Stones, who were the arch enemy of all the parents. But, you know, my father, yeah, coming out of the 50s and that, he was one that was always talking about people with their hair, their long hair and whatnot sort of thing. And even then in the bank, there was a guy, George started the bank, who was the junior after me sort of thing. And he had a Beatles haircut and he was mad Beatles fan.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't have it in the bank. They sent him 3 times for a haircut. And in the end, he just didn't get the short as what they wanted it, sort of thing. So I think they moved him. He went to Newcastle or something, probably
because of his,
away from the front. From the
because
front
he's
counter.
Of his,
yeah,
his
because of his
haircut.
Yeah.
Wow. It's interesting now, especially now, is when people, especially the students I teach, when they talk about the 60s, to them it's hippies. That's what their first thing is. Oh yeah, hippies and peace and love. And it's,
yeah, well, that's
certainly
probably
not
the 5 years, the late 5 years.
I think it's maybe. Not even that. I don't think it's a, well. I mean, you would know more than me, but it's nowhere near as widespread as the. It's like the image is that, but that's a very small percentage of the community.
Well, the rest of it,
still
not everybody in the community could afford just to go and
hang out,
live in Byron Bay or with the Bellinger Valley sort of thing, where they're still living.
They're still living today,
still,
yeah.
And, it's like when the first band, Missing Links, it might have been called, that came up for the Saturday night dance, I think, that had hair way down past their shoulders.
Yeah.
All the people did was stand around whistling and flicking pennies under the stage. You know, so that was certainly a shock to their system. But anyway, the loved ones, yes, Commotion was the show I was trying to think of.
Oh, okay.
It's with a K, I think.
Commotion.
From memory. And they used to have these bands, they'd play mimed music for half an hour of an afternoon.
Wow. Starting with a K.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And the Animals, of course, they were very popular at that time as well. And if you went to a dance, if you happened to be dancing with someone when they played House of the Rising Sun, then it gave you a chance to
slow dance?
Slow dance, yeah.
Great song.
Never made any difference. You
never had much luck.
My life was pretty crappy, and no love life at that stage of the thing.
Is that Danny Boy on your list?
Yes, that's the band Blind Boys of Alabama.
Of Alabama.
I saw them on, they're on Tony Squires' show with the late. Late great thing, Monday night, used to be on Monday Night Sports Show.
Yeah.
There was Tony Squires.
Oh, yep, I know
Peter,
Rebecca Wilson.
Yeah, Rebecca Wilson and Peter Wilkie, Alan Wilkie, Peter Wilkie. Peter Wilkie?
Mm-hmm.
Sound wrong? Yeah. So I threw a couple of those in so that I'd sort of remember. Creedence has always been sort of a good song. Midnight Special was probably the favourite one.
You know what? That's
Creedence.
What I was trying to remember before. That's the movie you showed me way too early. Was the movie version of The Twilight Zone and American Werewolf in London.
That was on the other day. I just watched that recently thinking, I won't give Cora a go at this one.
Well, I think the opening scene of The Twilight Zone movie where they're driving in the car singing The Midnight Special or Blue Moon or whatever.
Blue Midnight Special,
Yeah, no, that didn't help me out very much.
Do you want to say anything really?
That one. Yeah, and American Werewolf in London was certainly, too early. Too early to...
again, you've got to stress and make sure you fully understand.
I don't know which I don't know how old I was, but I don't know how many 8-year-olds used to walk down the steps of Wynyard Station thinking there was going to be a werewolf coming at them with their older brothers going, ooh, as you're going through those tunnels.
They'd be like that, those older brothers.
Not for me.
And, you know, Skyhooks, they were more a 70s band, but when...
Now, you used to work in the pub,
I was
right?
working in the pub, and they used to have the bands play on a Saturday night, a Friday night. But yeah, mainly Saturday and Skyhooks. They, I was very impressed with them. Apart from what's his face, Simons, Red Simons.
He wasn't
very friendly, but the others sort of all come and have a drink afterwards, and that Shirley Strong, all those ones. And they probably had death. All of those 60s bands used to come there. Midnight Oil, Angry Anderson.
Yeah. You said the Angels there one night?
Paul Young, yes. The Angels were there. Dragon. Dragon probably pulled the biggest crowd. No, none of this occupational health and safety. They'd take all the tables out and they'd just pack them in.
Pack them in as many as they could. Yeah,
and that's and it was closed in air, smoky and sweaty, and the people behind the bar, we just worked our asses off the whole time. We always run out of glasses because they wouldn't ever come back. And but anyway, they're always good. But
so you used to work at the bank Monday to Friday, and then work at the pub.
Well, I used to I was working. Two nights a week, usually, so Mondays and Thursdays, I'd be working. Monday night, I was the night manager.
There was a Monday night at the pub?
Just as the night manager. There wasn't bands or anything like that, but I'd work from 7 till 10, lock up, get the money away, all that sort of stuff. So 10:30, get home at 11 or 12.
Up at 6. Is that where you used to commute to Sydney? The hour train, yeah?
Hornsby. Hornsby then, so Hornsby and Gordon, so it was sort of a little bit better than that.
Yeah.
And then sometimes then Saturday afternoon, 11 till 2, and then come home and then go back again at 5:30 or something like that. So you're forever smelling the stale bloody alcohol and whatever else. Smelling I quit a few times and then with sort of the money and... You know, we'd need sort of extra money or whatever. But I started off working at Claude Fay's when we first got married, and I used to work there 3 days a week, and I think two nights a week, at about $28. But I think I basically, that was my money then, and all the bank money sort of thing was saved, and that's how we got the deposit for the house, basically.
Now, Claude Fay's, Michael said, Claude Fay's, let's see what he wrote down here. Claude Fay's, you could only work there when you were really drunk. Does that sound familiar?
That's probably more the Ocean Beach Hotel.
It was the only time you could actually work there?
Claude Fay's was, it was a little bit more upmarket, and they were very hard on, you had to behave. And they were sort of hard taskmasters. All your bar staff sort of, 10 o'clock had come. You had to kick the people out, and then you had to clean up. So, you know, one bloke would be cleaning the bar and stacking the bottles and counting the tills and all that sort of thing. There'd be three guys out vacuuming the carpets and all that, and one bloke cleaning the toilet. And there was one guy who always used to go to sleep in the toilet, one of the customers, and they used to put the bloody water on under the thing. And this bloke...
Every time, anyway.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, Claude Fay's, and then... We used to go there on Thursday nights for dinner, usually, with your mother and I and someone else. Vicky, I think. Do you remember Vicky from St. Darwin? Yeah, we'd go and have lunch or dinner there. And, I was finished up. I was working the bottle shop there, which is a breeze compared to...
Being in the bar.
Behind the bar. So then I came up here and one of the guys that worked with your mother down at the minor branch, he worked there and... He got me an interview, and she said, "Oh, yeah, come in Friday, blah blah blah, and I'll put you on the roster and that." And whereas at Claude Fay's, he did a night or two nights
Yeah.
You know, to make sure you were suitable and able to do it and all that sort of stuff. You always had a tie, always had to wear the bow tie, and that when you come up here and that's sort of
yeah, different sort of places.
But it was really, you know, pressure Friday nights and Saturday night being. So if you came off the train sort of thing and the fleeting thing in, maybe sometimes I'd have a glass of milk and a sandwich, I think.
On your way to the pub.
On my way to the pub and then work down there.
Well, at least you're working. I'm sure lots of fathers were doing sandwich and milk and on the way to the pub.
Yeah, for different reasons. But then it used to be good because the pub used to shut at 10, but then when those vans came in, they used to open till 12, and so that used to make, so you wouldn't get home at 2 or something. And stink, you don't want to share if you're just stinking stale beer.
So what was it, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, you started working at the bank at 15.
Yes.
You worked there 25 years?
Just shy of 26.
Yeah. Just shy of 26.
And then, so I left in the end of September and the 26 years came up first of
September. You worked there, that's what gets me, is that I'm 38 and when you were 40, you'd worked somewhere for 25 years. And then, bye, see you later.
Hmm.
So when the recession hit, 87, and the shockwaves of that went through the banking industry and they restructured and retrenched thousands of workers.
Well, they did. There was in Westpac, they were just coming back. The office staff, like the branch staff, were reasonably safe. But the internals and it just got too much. But as it turned out, you know, the bank nearly folded.
Yeah.
It had lost so much money during that 87 to 90 period, and half the board had to resign because they'd misled the general public, and Kerry Packer bought 10% of the bank. That's having money when you can do that.
Yeah.
And him and Dunlop, who was the slasher sort of thing, went to board meetings and they had an idea of how to turn the bank around and do this and do that, and anyway, they wouldn't agree with him, so he sold his shares and made... You know, he bought them at $2.80 and sold them at $4.50 or something.
Yeah, wow. So what does that do for you? You've got three kids. So I would have been 12, 14, 16. You've got three kids. You've worked somewhere 25 years and now you're 40. And we're in a recession. There's no jobs.
Well, they said there's jobs around, but I'd always... It was a conflicting thing. I knew that whatever happened, you're always going to have doubts. Like if you decide, yes, you'll take the redundancy and you go, you're going to think, oh, God, I should have stayed in the bank. If you don't do it, you're going to be always thinking, oh, I should have left one of the chance. And I could have stayed in the bank, as it turned out.
They offered you a position.
Because they did offer me a position. To this day, I don't know what it is. I told them I'd made this. Had gone through the anguish of the decision.
Yeah, it came too late.
I didn't want to go back. And anyway, so luckily the redundancy payments were quite good from there, so I knew that I wasn't desperate to find a job.
Yeah.
So I think I had to go to the psychologist because of my seniority level. I had one-on-one psychology.
So they paid for me
to go to the to see the psychologist, and I knew the true worth of the psychologist when I had to fill out a questionnaire, you know, answer these questions like in blots and sort of thing. And she said, oh, all your results show that job security isn't a big issue with you, sort of thing. You're looking more at the money side of thing, which is very unusual. And I said, I just worked for a place for 26 years and they kicked me out the door. Job security doesn't exist. There is no job security. I suppose that's correct in your case, isn't it? Yeah. So I thought, they're paying you only $50 an hour or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I would have still been going today if the bank had kept paying.
Yeah.
But in the end, she said, well, look, I don't think there's anything more we can do for you.
I mean, I it's easy to retrofit things and make things that are convenient, but I wonder if, I don't know. I've maybe talked to the other boys, my brothers about this, but I still have the same attitude, and I don't know whether it was seeing that at 12, that you can work somewhere for 25 years and then they boot you, where I've never had any loyalty to any place I've worked, because these things don't really matter when it comes down to it.
I don't know, that could well be the case. But on the alternate side of it was having commuted for so long, leaving early, coming home late, and not seeing the kids.
Yeah.
At later time it was a bit easier, but there were many an occasion where you'd have been in bed when and I got home at 8 o'clock sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you'd come home tired, your brain wouldn't be thinking too well, and then somebody sells you ProMass, and what could you do about it? But when I did leave the bank, though, it then gave me the opportunity to reconnect with the children. So, I used to, Michael was in year 12, I think, but anyway.
Yeah.
I used to go and watch him play touch football, go and participate in the sports, watch Jason go bloody lawn bowling and all that sort of stuff. So it gave me a bit of an opportunity to do that. And that's when fit with Ian and I, walking places and, walking here, there and everywhere, instead of stopping for a rest, walking into the back room or something.
But you mowed lawns you were the lawnmower man on the peninsula for a while?
That was 93, I think I started.
Not in winter, but in summer, that was some full on work.
Well, I said the 16 lawns that I had was, you did 4 a day, 2 days a week or something, alternate fortnight. Some of them were weekly jobs, but then 55 I had at the
55.
I used to employ someone at least one day a week.
55?
55 lawns,
wow.
So I think the most I did in the day was 10. That was sort of going 8 till about 6:30 at night.
It would have been around Christmas time, whatever.
Christmas is always a busy week because no one wants it done on a Monday. As Anne said, that's the doubtful. Was because mowing the 55 lawns, it gave me the opportunity to really eat what I wanted. I used to enjoy.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then as the lawns got less, the lunches didn't, of course. So now that I'm not mowing any lawns, I should be eating nothing. So.
Yeah. More tomatoes.
I can't eat any more tomatoes. I'm on about 4 a day.
I know you've probably got more to talk about.
There's only...
is there anything you wanted to
One of the things with Skybooks that I'm forever endeared to them for me was that they actually did have a song called Why Don't You All Get Fucked? which is the chorus. And not very many people have ever heard it.
Well, we'll play you out with that, no doubt. But thank you for finally sitting down with me. And that's it.